This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. Last Wednesday, the Portland, Maine School Committee voted to make prescription birth control available to students at King Middle School. Most middle school kids range in age from 11 to 13 years old. Parental permission to obtain the contraception is not required. Not surprisingly, the decision met with heated reaction from both sides. Opponents say it's a band-aid that doesn't fix the deeper issues of why some 11-year-olds are having sex in the first place. Proponents say young kids who are sexually active must have access to protection. This is the first school in Maine to offer such services, but Seattle and Baltimore have offered similar programs, and we will talk about those as well. Also, we want to hear from you, parents, students, and school administrators. How has this issue played out in your community? Is birth control available at your school? Has it been effective? And how young is too young for birth control? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. The email address is talk@npr.org. And you can also comment on our blog. It's at npr.org/blog of the nation. Later on the opinion page, should foster parents be paid to raise children? But first, birth control in middle school. And we begin with Lori Gramlich. She is one of the seven members of the Portland School Committee who voted in favor of making birth control available to the students at King Middle School. She joins us now from member station WXXI in Rochester, New York. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Lori, let's talk a little bit about how you arrived at this decision. How difficult was the process? What went into your thinking as you faced this decision?
Well, Lynn, it was an extraordinarily difficult decision for me. I have a 14-year-old daughter who attends one of our public high schools. She's a freshman this year, so we've just gone through the middle school years, which are trying even on a good day. And I struggled with the component about parental consent because, as a mom, I certainly do want to be privy to all that's impacting my child. Having said that, I understand the incidence of, teen intercourse and our young people having sex is something that we need to be mindful of. And if we can be in a position to prevent one unintended teen pregnancy, then I support that. But I did grapple with it somewhat. And
did you talk to your daughter about it? Did you talk to your 14-year-old
daughter? I absolutely did. I did talk to my daughter about it because she's just, this is her reality. She's living these years. And I asked her what she thought, and I wanted to know point blank, from her perspective, do we have kids in middle school having sex? And she said, Mom, not really 6th or 7th graders, but she said, I know 8th graders who are. And I said, what do you think about, kids getting birth control? She said, if it means that they're not going to have a baby, that would be fine. I said, what do you think about kids, getting permission from their parents? She said, Mom, let's be realistic. There's no way that a kid's going to go and get birth control if they have to get their parents' permission. They won't even go talk to anybody about it.
I think the big criticism of this is that some people feel that on a certain level, this condones sexual activity. This says it's okay to be sexually active, and we'll just provide the protection for you.
I do not subscribe to that. I know there's a body out there that certainly holds that thought process. I think that we have data that will substantiate the fact that when we are candid about what our young people are doing and offering them choices to, to prevent it and having these kinds of conversations, there's some incidence of sexuality and intercourse decreasing. So I don't subscribe to the fact that it's condoning anything. As a matter of fact, the conversation that I have with my daughter and hopefully other parents will have with their children is the first mode we want to look at is abstinence. There is no birth control which is 100% effective other than abstinence. Having said that, we know that our young people are engaging in intercourse and they need to be provided with the tools they need to protect themselves.
Apart from the anecdotal evidence you said you discussed with your daughter, what kind of hard data did the committee have? Were you dealing with some hard data in terms of rates of pregnancy at this middle school?
We were. We heard from the head nurse of our school department. We also heard from the doctor that is managing the health clinics, of which we have about 7 throughout our city housed at our public schools. They are administered through the health department. The school does not provide any funding for these health clinics, nor do we administer any of the services through the health clinics. But the data we received was that somewhere in the neighborhood of about 14 to 17 young people admitted to obviously being sexually active and being pregnant over the past 4 years throughout the three middle schools in our city. There were a very small number of young people admitting to being sexually active at King Middle School, and being that we do have one of our health clinics there and offer an array of services, it was the thought of the health professionals that we increase services to include reproductive health.
All right, I want to bring in another guest now. Sarah Brown is the director of the National Campaign to Prevent Teen Pregnancy, and she joins us here in Studio 3A. Thanks for coming in for this show.
Thank you.
And I wanted to continue talking a little bit about numbers. We just heard some of the numbers at this particular middle school, but let's talk about the broader picture now.
Right.
Are there numbers that indicate how many kids of this age in middle school, and let's say we're talking about 11 to 13, roughly speaking, how many do we know are sexually active?
Well, the current estimate is at about 6%. Of students have had sex in middle school. That's as reported by high school students. You know, have you ever had sex, and if so, when? So it looks like about 6%. The good news is that that's actually down from a number of years ago. It's gone down almost 40% since 91, so there's been a decrease. As you might guess, more boys will say that they have had sex in middle school than girls. And with regard to pregnancies themselves, in 2002, the current estimate is that about 17,000 pregnancies were reported amongst girls 14 and younger. That number, too, has gone down almost by half in the last 10 years.
Does anybody know why these numbers are going down? Is there hard data on that?
Or? Well, the overall teen pregnancy rate has gone down, and the younger students are part of that trend. It's also true for 15 to 17 and even 18 to 19. I hope it's because there's been more parental attention, community attention, contraception, and so forth. There are probably several things driving it down.
Yeah. Why would a school like the King Middle School, and we can ask Lori about this specifically too, but why would a school like this or other middle schools, what is the benefit to the school to offering this kind of prescription birth control in addition to, say, condoms if they're already doing that?
Well, I think it's a good question. One of the things that Lori said that I think is particularly important is that this clinic, like a number of school-based or school-linked clinics, are administered by the health department, not necessarily the school. And a classic response of the health system in general is that when you see a serious problem, and certainly pregnancy is one of them, especially amongst youngsters, you want to intervene. You want to treat. And condoms do prevent pregnancy. They often are not very well used by younger teens especially. And not surprisingly, a health department would say, well, we need to ratchet this up a little bit. There are more effective methods. As Lori reported, they'd already had 17 pregnancies reported in recent years. And they decided, I presume, that they wanted to bring in even more effective methods. That's a classic response of the health system to a serious problem.
We are talking about birth control, how young is too young for birth control. If you would like to join our discussion, you can give us a call at 800-989-8255 or send us an email to talk@npr.org. And we are going to try and take a call now from Wally, I believe it is, calling from Florida. Hi, you're on Talk of the Nation.
Yes, I just want to share experience that happened to me during the mid-1970s. I was in high school, and my, at that time, girlfriend, which I probably shouldn't have had a girlfriend, was in junior high, 16 and 14, our respective ages, and got into trouble, and pregnancy was involved, and ended up having to, put a kid up for adoption. And if I had known anything about birth control, this would not have happened. I thought I knew the rhythm method, but I obviously didn't know anything what I was thinking about or talking about, and shouldn't have been doing it anyhow. But it's been kind of, it's in the back of my mind for every day. So, and I'm sure it is hers too.
Yeah, this is a long time ago when these kinds of things weren't even on people's radar screens, I don't think, in terms of offering any kind of birth control to kids through the public schools. Is that right, Sarah? I mean, that's how much things have changed. And thanks
so
much for your call, Wally.
Well, Wally makes a very important almost side comment in his remarks, and that is he says, I probably shouldn't have been doing it anyway. And I think that part of the sort of firestorm in Portland is that people agree, almost without exception, that a young person, 13, 12, 11, really has no business having sexual intercourse. I have yet to meet anybody who says, oh, yeah, that's okay. So the tension this sets up is a medical response, as we sort of talked about a minute ago, but then I think this larger public conversation of who are these young people and where, what are our community failings that we have a situation where that many right. young people are having sex. And one of the things that's been puzzling to me about the press coverage of this event in Portland is that even though there's been coverage of sort of what the school board voted, and I'd like to hear more from Lori about this and what people thought about the good or the bad of contraception, what I'm curious about is what's the community response about young people having sex at this young age in general?
And I wanted to ask Lori before we have to let her go, you know, if she had any idea that it was going to create this kind of firestorm. And is it creating, apart from the controversy, is it creating a discussion that might lead to some of these deeper answers that are needed about the whole question of young kids and sex? Lori.
Thank you. Certainly, I did not anticipate that it would. I never thought that I'd be on Talk of the Nation, let's just put it that way. I didn't think that it would be, you know, I knew it would be controversial. I didn't think it would rise to this magnitude. And people have asked, do you think this is a good thing that we're having these kinds of conversations? And I would say, absolutely. To me, it feels like it's the elephant in the living room. If we do not look at the facts that even one or two of our young people are having unintended pregnancies, 12, 13, 14 years old, then I think we're being extraordinarily naive. And I think if we fail to recognize that, then we're failing to do our part. And, you know, is it the parents' responsibility to have these kinds of conversations with their children? Absolutely. I have these kinds of conversations with my 14-year-old daughter all the time. But what about the kids who are in less than supportive environments who aren't able to have those kinds of conversations?
Lori,
I think
Gramlich,
we have a responsibility.
Thanks so much, Lori Gramlich, for joining
Thank
us
you.
Today. Lori Gramlich is a school committee member in Portland, Maine, and she voted in support of the measure we're discussing here today on Talk of the Nation. We're going to continue that discussion with Sarah Brown and another guest when Talk of the Nation continues. I'm Lynn Neary. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. We'll get to the opinion page a bit later in the show and the role of money in foster care. Right now, how young is too young for birth control? That debate was set off after a middle school in Maine voted to give students, some as young as 11 years old, access to the pill without parents' consent. Our guest is Sarah Brown, director of the National Campaign to Prevent Teen Pregnancy. We want to hear from parents, students, school administrators. How has this issue played out where you live? Is birth control available at your school? Has it been effective? And how young is too young for birth control? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And you can also read what other listeners have to say at our blog. That is npr.org/blogofthenation. And with me in Studio 3A is Sarah Brown, director of the National Campaign to Prevent Teen Pregnancy. Sarah, you were saying to me that this isn't just a question of kids, this is really a question of whether kids should be having sex at all.
I think that's right. I think what set off this firestorm in part is should young people be given birth control. But I think the more profound issue is should people 11, 12, 13 be having sex at all? And what I've been puzzled by is that there doesn't seem to be a strong, you know, at least from hundreds of miles south of Portland, we haven't heard a strong discussion amongst the parents and the community leaders in Portland to say, look, the fundamental issue is, why are so many young people having sex at this young age? A second order question is birth control. But, you know, sex at a young age carries many risks. Higher risk of sexually transmitted diseases. The partners are often much older. There are questions of abuse. Lots and lots of risk. So, the birth control question is important, and it's largely a medical question. But what's going on in a community where we have 11-year-olds who are having sex? I think that is what requires most of the attention.
Yeah. Let's take a call now from Jim. He's calling from Iowa. Jim, hi.
Hi. Yeah, we had a stepdaughter that was given the opportunity to get birth control pills at a young age by one of her teachers. She was transported to the next community, and I don't know how they did it, but they got her the pill. And I think the worst of it was that, as a result, her best friend ended up getting pregnant, probably because of, you know, a sidetrack issue. Just it raised another level of awareness. And a rather unpopular girl who probably may not have had that much interest at all was suddenly, you know, competing. And then she had an abortion. And sometimes I think it makes me wonder if the real issue isn't that as adults, as parents, we're thinking, how can we relieve ourselves of another issue that embarrasses us? You know, what, you know, would it be worse if the child had an abortion? Would it be worse if there was less activity and we had less pregnancies? Or would it be worse if we just didn't know what was going on because nobody was coming home pregnant?
You know, Jim, I just want to make sure that I'm understanding what you're saying right so that I can phrase the right question to Sarah, which is, it seems to me you are saying, in this case, you know of this young girl might not have had sex if she hadn't had access to the birth control. Is that the point you're
what
making?
What I'm saying is that when she saw that our stepdaughter had the pill, I think it raised a level of competition in her,
okay.
And she was thinking, well, if she's doing it, maybe I should be doing it.
Sarah Brown, that's really, because competition, peer pressure, all of that is huge. Begins in middle school, continues through high school. It's really all part of this discussion.
That's right, and that's one of many, many issues that needs to be discussed, and it's back on this issue of sex, and that is everybody doing it, or are all my friends doing it? Generally, the answer is no, not everybody's doing it, and not all my friends are doing it. And the caller also raises a very important point about what parents do and don't know. What we do know from national data is that most parents who have children in this young age who are having sex, most of the parents don't know that, or rather they don't believe that. Fewer than a third of parents of middle school children who've had sex have any clue that this is what's going on. So it raises again this issue that the parents have to step up to the plate. This is a very long, sometimes difficult, sensitive conversation about what do we expect in our family and our community, and then how are we going to set up the conditions that protect young people, not just from peer pressure, but from the pressure of older partners, from the glamorization of sex in the media, sex with no consequences. It means that everybody has to sort of, you know, stand shoulder to shoulder and say, this is what we think is in your best interest. And for people in middle school, that answer is going to be not to have sexual
right.
intercourse.
Right. And want to address parental responsibility, but I also want to bring another guest in. We're talking with Sarah Brown, director of the National Campaign to Prevent Teen Pregnancy. And joining us now is Diane Miller. She was a school nurse for 8 years at a high school in Portland, Maine. She is very much opposed to the committee's decision, and she joins us now from her home in Portland. Diane, thanks for joining the show today.
You're welcome.
Now, why are you against this measure? And I presume it's based on your own experiences in the high school.
And that's even a high school setting where young girls would come in to me sobbing over having given away their virginity, a priceless, precious thing that we're too afraid in the school realm to say that sex before marriage is wrong, and we need to be more adamant in allowing girls to know that, and not just because of it being a religious base as much as the emotional piece of it. We aren't preparing these young people for what happens to these girls emotionally when they give something that was intended and meant to be precious and priceless, that they freely would be giving it away. And the ones that I counseled, they basically had a broken heart. And my question to those who want to give out the birth control pill is, it's supposed to keep them safe. Well, can it heal a broken heart?
So you're saying the issue was not so much, the issue that you were seeing that was really problematical didn't necessarily have to be a pregnancy. It was just the emotional fallout of
yeah.
the sex in the first place. Is that what you're saying?
Instead of the answer being worldwide, we know that our young kids are going to have sex anyway. We need to take a step back and start asking ourselves, not just in each family, but also those who don't have a caring mom and dad in place, we need to be asking, why are they choosing such risky behavior? And that's where we need to start with the fact that some of these girls are not having a home where mom and dad are providing unconditional love. We need to spend the funds to give them some counseling, some home intervention, and mentoring system needs to be set up for these young girls. The thing is, we are talking children, and everybody wants to say, well, it's not going to be just the 11-year-olds. That's not who's looking to do it. I don't care if they're even 14, 15, 16. Sex outside of marriage is not only wrong, it's disastrous. And if women today that were married right now or have even ended in divorce, which half of our population of marriages have ended in divorce, I wonder if they would ever be honest and admit that the tie goes back to something in their own past, some hurt, some heart cry that was not met as a young person, and that we still are all living in a messed up situation. The answer of a birth control pill is so wrong. It is so backwards. And the whole situation dealing with the diseases, they said on the school board that they would treat the STDs, and the STD doesn't sound as bad as saying the words like chlamydia, gonorrhea, herpes, HIV. Well, herpes and AIDS are not diseases that can be cured by medication, and the newest virus that they're informing girls about right now is the HPV.
All right, Diane, I want you to stay with us. We're going to bring in a guest from Baltimore, which is a city which has had a similar program, and I think we're going to hear something about that. Peter from Baltimore?
Hi.
Yeah. Hi. Go ahead.
Yeah, my name is Peter Bielenson. I was Baltimore's health commissioner from 1992 to 2005, and I worked in our both middle school and high school-based health centers. And actually, we do full-scale health clinics in about 20 schools. Six or seven of them are middle schools, including contraception as part of a sort of holistic health approach. I worked in those school-based health centers, and this has been going on for 20-plus years in Baltimore. So I'm a little surprised, not shocked, but a little surprised by what's been going on in Portland in terms of the outcry. I clearly agree with Sarah and even your recent caller that abstinence is absolutely the best policy for young people, middle school and high school. However, you do have to deal with reality on a couple points. First of all, some choose to be sexually active. And as Ms. Brown was saying, we actually did a study of our 12, 13, and 14-year-old pregnant girls, or actually girls that delivered, and found that a huge percentage had partners who were 5 or more years older than they were. They were effectively coerced. So it is just crucial to protect the health of these young people, some of whom are made not good choices, others of whom are being coerced in many ways, to prevent the consequences of sexual activity at that young age. And we did provide STD treatment, we did provide condoms, and we were able over the period of 1992 to 2005 to show about a 45% drop in teen births in Baltimore, in part due to increased access to contraception through the schools, and in part due to increased condom usage due to fear of AIDS among our teenage girls.
Diane Miller, it sounds to me like you're wanting to respond to this, and I do want to just ask you what your take is when you hear, I mean, it does seem that some kids inevitably are, whether abstinence is the best method or not, you are going to get some kids who are going to be sexually active, and if they have parents who aren't taking the responsibility, then what is the responsibility of the schools
then
towards those girls?
That's where all this funding that the Baltimore area is talking about, that they've used this funding to help treat the STDs. Why are we treating after the fact? And again, I will have to say to him, you cannot clear up and treat herpes. It is a virus that will reoccur and reinfect again and again. AIDS, we know. We're an educated.
What can schools
public do
before?
No, AIDS cannot be cured by medication.
Diane, is there something the schools can do before the fact? Is there a responsibility? Is there something they can do?
Spend the funds to do some type of counseling and to get into those homes of those young girls that it's so evident to see that they have empty, broken hearts. And yes, so that's why they are making choices that as Americans and as adults, we're wrong in what we're showing them on TV and allowing to be out in the public. We're giving our young people such horrific mixed messages. And again, maybe if some of the adult women would start to be open and honest and admit how their own past sexual misguided choices has affected them. Because I wonder why we are having so many unhappy, like I said, marriages that don't last. I believe if people would be honest, and this money that he spends for all these statistics he has, let's go into the homes and let's do a study to find out how many women have been emotionally scarred for life because of poor choices they made in looking for love.
Diane Miller, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate
you're welcome.
You joining us.
Thanks.
Diane Miller was a school nurse for 8 years in a high school in Portland, Maine. She is presently employed at a gynecologist's office. Also with me today is Sarah Brown, director of the National Campaign to Prevent Teen Pregnancy. And we are talking about the issue of public schools and allowing children to have the option of getting prescription birth control without parental consent. How young is too young for birth control? How young is too young for sex is the topic here. If you'd like to join our conversation, it's 800-989-8255, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Sarah, a very emotional topic, clearly from the conversation we just heard with Diane Miller. I wonder if you can respond to some of what Diane was suggesting about what the position should be, the public policy position should be, the health department position should be, the school position should be on all this.
Can I put in a word, too?
And you may put in a word, too, yes.
Thanks.
It's nice to have Dr. Bielenson on the phone. Hi, Peter.
Hey, nice to see you again, Sarah.
Well, a couple of points. There's a developmental perspective here, which is that what we say and do and feel is in everybody's best interest for someone 11 may be very different than what we do for someone who's 18 or 19. And although I think we are all absolutely centered on a very, very strong abstinence message for these very young women because of abuse, because of risk, and so forth, the national opinion is a little more mixed as people get older. And in fact, the American public doesn't see contraception and abstinence as pitted against one another. What they see is that for younger people, for people in risky situations and so forth, we absolutely must encourage them to postpone sex, for sure. When young people are having sex, when we know they're about to, when they're almost fully grown or in young adulthood, the vast majority of Americans feel very comfortable with contraceptive services, even if these individuals are not married. Fewer than 5% of people are virgins at time of marriage. So we understand now, particularly with the later age of marriage, that there are many, many years when people are sexually active and not married. And obviously, we want them to neither be pregnant nor to get sexually transmitted diseases.
Let me bring Peter back into the conversation briefly because we only have a few minutes left. Peter, were there some points you wanted to make that you hadn't made yet?
Yeah, a couple things. I mean, first of all, obviously there are a lot of cultural influences affecting teenagers, and you know, I think the school can combat to some extent. I really think it's dependent on parents being involved, or at least adults that are important in kids' lives, in trying to encourage abstinence. Let me bring up one point which has not been touched about too much, which is actually seems to be the big controversy in Portland, and that is the availability of contraceptives without parental consent. Let me tell you, I'm a physician, and I worked in our clinics with our teenagers, and all the time, every single teenager that I talk with, we always tried to bring the parent. We would talk to the kid by themselves, obviously, for confidentiality reasons, but I would always encourage the teenager to involve their parent in the decision-making process, to let them know if it was okay with them to put on the pill for a variety of reasons. One, it improves compliance dramatically if the parent knows. Second, I always want to encourage the teenager, as long as they felt it was safe to talk to the parent, to talk about these issues, which some might call taboo issues, whether they're mental health, substance abuse, or contraception, all three of which, by the way, are covered by most minor consent laws. So in most cases, the teenager actually does involve the parent.
All right. Thanks so much for calling, Peter.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
And adding to our discussion.
Thanks.
We're going to try and get one last caller in here very quickly. This is James calling from Arizona. James.
Hi.
Go ahead, James. We just have about a minute and a half.
Thanks for taking my call. I just want to say, the question is, how early should birth control be available? And I've always been an advocate. How early should sex education be available? I think in first grade, when kids are getting reading, writing, math, spelling, they should also be getting sex education, guns, drugs, all these things that kids are getting into earlier and earlier at an appropriate level needs to be brought in right away. And we have the mindset that, you know, we need to you know, hide these things from them. They need to be blocked from these things. But they're going to find them, and so it's better that they know.
Do you have kids yourself? Do you have kids yourself, James?
My niece actually became pregnant at the age 11 by a man who was 19 years old.
Oh, my gosh.
And she didn't know what was going on, and by the time she was, 8 months along, that's when she started realizing that something was wrong and that she was pregnant. She was 11 years old. So, birth control, of course, that's an answer, but what about appropriate education?
Excellent. James, thanks so much for making that point and for bringing your story to Talk the Nation. Thank you much. Thank you very much. And Sarah Brown, thanks also to you.
Always.
Sarah is the director of the National Campaign to Prevent Teen Pregnancy. Coming up, Cash Kids and the Foster Care System are on the opinion page. Stay with us. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.